This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. Did I get that, Brian? Did I get the good afternoon?
You're in? A little rusty.
Okay. Yeah, I am rusty. I just got back from Florida. Had a great time.
Nice tan, by the way.
Thank you. And I want you to know that I brought the weather with me. It's absolutely gorgeous. I understand it got down pretty cold while I was gone, but I made a point that I did not want to leave it back there, and I wanted people in Rutherford County to enjoy it like I have. And if you want to send your thanks, just send it in care of Brian Barrett here at the radio
station.
I'll
get it to you.
I appreciate that. And want to let you know as we begin the day that the first part of the show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar. And they're located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. They have something for everyone on their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items unique to Blue. They have brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza, and be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar, owners Marty Brown and Greg Hogue. And I have one of my special friends on again today, Newt Malloy. And of course, Newt is kind of an expert on everything. We've had him here for, we've talked about history, and we've talked about some of the unique areas in the Middle Tennessee area. And one area that is really special to you, I know, and it's special to a lot of people, is Suwanee.
And
the old Suwanee Military Academy. And it sits over there. I guess, is that in Franklin County, or it's closer? It's right on the edge.
It is. It's bordered, I guess, by Marion and Grundy County, but in Franklin County.
Of course, you've lived your life here.
That's correct.
And I was wondering, was there any special reason that you left the Rutherford County school system to go to we're at Franklin County or whatever?
Well,
or were you a bad boy? Because at the military academy, that's what people kind of associate with when you send the guys over somewhere else.
Send them to Columbia Military Academy or
Castle Heights
or
something like that.
<That's right. laughs> Well, my mother and daddy, they thought, boy, Newton Ford needs to focus more on his academics. And, of course, I was real small. I could see I wasn't going to play football, you know, for Mr. Pate, or at least he's going
to
be.
Mr. Pate would have loved to have had you. I can tell you that.
Well,
you're a pretty good athlete.
Well, thank you. You're mighty kind to say that.
But I watch you work out every morning at the Y, just about, when we're there at the same time, and you outdo all the 15, 16, 20-year-olds.
You know, Truman, it gets tougher as you get older.
Oh, it does get tougher.
Seems to me.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
One of your good friends called me this morning, Eddie Ayers. And he wanted me to ask you a question. Have you ever heard anybody with the nickname Mouse?
Yes. and that is my nickname.
Oh, really? How in the world did you get that?
I think it all started when we were 14, 15 years old, working for Mr. Duffy in the old Murfreesboro Recreation Department, you know, out at Oakland. Mansion there, and we were, you know, fixing the fields up, cleaning out the, hole, what we called it, the hole. It was, a depression down there where there's a lot of growth and so forth. And you know how young boys do, they start kidding around with each other and so forth. And they named me Mouse. They named Kenneth Eakes Bird. And they named Butch Vaughn Hog.
Now that last one fits.
It does, doesn't it?
and you know something that is remarkable. I know that we have a great history here, and we keep up with each other and each other's family. And really, if one family just leads to another family, we're all just one. But you have a special family that you developed when you went to school at Suwanee. A bunch of your friends are just really stayed extremely close to each other.
Oh, we really did, Truman. And, you know, I guess part of it was, you know, when we were up there during that school year, we were up there with each other 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, under the same, you know, rules and discipline and all that sort of stuff. And
sounded like you was in the military.
Well, we were in the military. But, you know, it's like a lot of things when, you know, you're subjected to the same thing as everybody around you. You don't feel like, well, you're singled out or anything like that.
You're all in the same boat.
You know, you always figure out how you're going to have fun and how you're going to make the best of it. And, of course, we had a lot of activities. I had a lot of athletics and, you know, other kinds of activities. And, of course, the mountain up there is just absolutely beautiful.
Gorgeous, gorgeous up there.
But, yeah, we have developed a close, you know, relationship even then, as well as over the years through reunions and so forth. And here about 2 weeks ago, we gathered down at an old farm down near Epps, Alabama. It's called Loudon. And a friend of mine, Lee Chappell, who's one of my classmates, came down from Kingsport, Tennessee, and spent the night with me Wednesday morning before we left out on Thursday morning. And of course we stopped by the Bob Woods Hammery and got a bunch of those ham biscuits, which we put in the oven and warmed up you know, for Friday morning's breakfast and Saturday morning's breakfast. But we got down there, and there were 29 former SMA cadets who, you know, from the class of, I guess, 1959 up to about 67.
From all over the country.
From all over the country. We had several of them from Texas, Waco, Fort Worth. I had one guy come in from Kansas City, you know, one from... down in New Orleans, a couple from Mississippi, and several from Florida and Kentucky and Tennessee and Arkansas. And just had a great time down there with everybody. And of course, this place is what's left of an old plantation. There's about 600 acres left that was originally 26,000 acre plantation.
And goodness gracious.
And that place has stayed in the family, being passed down, you know, since 1830 when it was established. And
well, you brought some pictures with you.
I did.
And that place is absolutely gorgeous. And and since it's a private place, I don't guess that they allow people to go down and visit and go through and look at it. But to me, that's stepping back in history almost 200 years to see what you've got. I mean, the house is going on 200 years old.
Oh, it is.
And just by looking at it and staying in that place, that had to be something special, especially when you get to relive your relationships with all the guys.
Absolutely. That place, he's got room for about 20 guys sleeping on the, you know, the couches and the beds and so forth, and then he's got some you know, mattresses that you sort of throw out and put on the floor and so forth. And those 29 folks I was talking about, some of them came in Wednesday and went home Thursday, and some of them came in Thursday and stayed till Saturday, and some of them Friday and Sunday. So the 29 weren't all there at the same time. So, but we had enough room, and the weather was just gorgeous down there.
Well, you could tell that, you know, no matter what kind of setting, you guys were going to have a good time, because how many people would go and spend their vacation, their week, sleeping on the floor?
That's right.
but just knowing you're there is, I know that every time you get up in the morning and you feel special, but you guys got so many things to do. Of course, my guess is when you first got there and you got everybody together, you probably spent all night talking and reliving what all you guys used to do and are doing now.
Well, as a matter of fact, one of our classmates, Larry Majors of the Johnny Majors, Shirley Majors,
the Shirley Majors
family.
Yes.
He brought our barber down there. In other words, the guy that cut our hair at the academy, and his name Horace Mays. Horace was there. I guess he was maybe 12, 13, 14 years older than we were.
Wow!
But Horace has always been just very, very interested in all of us and stayed up with us. And Larry brought Horace down there. And Horace has been down there for a number of years in the past. He's probably the best golfer of all of us. Stays in great shape. But anyway, Horace was on one of the couches, you know, close to one of the dens and so forth. And Larry got to talking to people and, you know, was staying up and so forth. And he was, I guess, about ready to go to bed somewhere around 2:30, you know, Thursday or Friday morning. And then in comes a guy coming in from Lexington, Kentucky. And, you know, he's all hyped up and so forth. So Larry stays up the rest of the night talking to him. And and Horace, he said he'd wake up every, you know, so often, and he'd hear Larry talking about scoring another touchdown.
Isn't that the great thing about being in sports, where you played football, baseball, basketball, or played them all, that inevitably you get better as you get older? and you know, when we have our old-timers baseball, you know, we might hit, say, 15 home runs during the season. I mean, by the time you get through talking, it's up to 50.
That's the truth.
It's amazing. But sometimes maybe losing your memory a little bit is good.
That's right. Well, Larry was on, I guess, maybe the last undefeated University of the South team, the 1963 team. And
now, was Shirley still coaching?
Shirley was the
time?
Coach.
Because I remember him coaching at Huntland and over at Swanee. And maybe one of the best, if not the best, coach ever in the state. Or one of the best. Of course, we had a great coach here, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Larry, I think, finished his his high school career at Huntland. Mm-hmm. And then Shirley got the job as the head football coach at the University of the South. And Larry, of course, came with him and did a postgraduate year at Swanee Military Academy. And that's how we got to know him. And then he went on and played 4 years for his father. And that last year, the 1963 team was an undefeated team. Remember, M.L. Agnew was a little All-American on that team. And Bill Johnson was a freshman that year, but went on, I think he made little All-American by the time he was a senior as well.
That's a big name, Bill Johnson, because they had an All-American at UT by the name of Bill Johnson. But it's so funny that every one of Shirley's boys ended up successful. I can't remember how many of them there were, but I think there's about six or seven in the family.
Well, that's right. There was Johnny, of course, was the oldest. Mm-hmm. And
Bill?
There was Bill, and of course.
Bobby.
And Joe.
Yeah, Joe.
And Larry and Bobby, and there was one daughter.
Right. And really a great-looking family.
Absolutely.
They all were. They're very charismatic. And I never will forget when Johnny was, I think, was an assistant at UT, and we were in our, I believe it was our class of 59 football team, and Johnny came in and with his group, and I guess they were looking over some of the players here at Murfreesboro Central. And I never will forget how nice and easygoing, just laid back he was. And he was one of those kind of guys that when he walks in a room, he wasn't a big guy by any means.
Right.
But when he came in, you automatically would look at him. And I think that's a tribute to Shirley, the way that all of his kids, the way they handled themselves.
Oh, it sure was. Shirley was just a phenomenal coach. He was, he was a real psychologist. And I like to, I think of him as being a lot like Mr. Pate. Mm-hmm. He he could look you in the eye and ask you a question that got down to the heart, your heart and soul, about, you know, how you were going to compete on the field or not compete, or whether you were going to give up, or so forth and so on. And he could reach down and bring something out of you and, you know, make you compete, you know, much better than you might otherwise.
Yeah, when you would look in those eyes and you got ready to answer the question that was thrown at you, it put a lot of pressure on you when you were dealing with somebody like that, because you wanted to make sure it was correct. And it was the same way when you played for them on the football field. You wanted to make sure that you got your block right, or you hit the right holes, and the timing was right, and all those other things. And you know, when we, in 59, we did not have the best talent in the world. There were probably a number of schools that we played that were really better physically than we were. But it was just that 12th man on the field, and I'm not talking about the fans, I'm talking about Mr. Pate,
right,
that was in your head every time that you did something. And failure was not a choice for you. You
right.
were not going to fail when you're out there on that field, or you'd be sitting on the bench the rest of the year, maybe.
You're right. Truman, and
didn't you tell me that you were talking to Larry, and Larry said that his dad, Shirley, mentioned Mr. Pate as one of his favorites?
Absolutely. Mr. Pate, I mean, Coach Majors had just a lot of respect for Coach Pate, mm-hmm. and not only on the football field, mm-hmm. but in basketball too. Larry was talking about going down and watching, or his father watching, a basketball game. I don't remember which one it was, but where there was this slick high school team warming up on one side of the floor, they had matching uniforms and warm-ups and all that sort of stuff, and there was Mr. Pate's team down there going through their warm-ups and so forth, and Larry said Coach Majors leaned over to the guys with him and he says, "You just watch. This other team's favored, but you watch. Murfreesboro Central is going to win this game."
You know, football, a lot of people look at it as talent, and you have to have. You have to have speed, you have to have size, and those other things. But if you don't have the heart to play football, you're never going to be successful. And it's always amazing to me how sports analysts and people like that pick these teams apart and what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. And as you and I know, the real story is right there on the football field. It's there during practice and preparing and all those other things, and how much attention that you can get from all those young people that are out there playing, in many respects, a grown man's game.
That's the truth. And, you know, going back to those questions that those coaches ask you about, that really get into the depth of your soul, the questions really they're not seeking the answer so much as they want you to answer the question for yourself.
Mm-hmm. They want you to step up to the plate is what they want
to
do.
That's right.
And you know as well as I do, football is not a game for the weak of heart. You can tell most of us that played football the way we walk right now because we carry that with us. I mean, you lay it all on the line. You really do. And it becomes such an integral part of your life, not only on the football field, but afterwards, how you're able to manage your success and your failures. And we all have those as we get older. Now tell me, the gentleman that owns the farm in Epps, Alabama.
His name is
about him.
Fleet James.
Yeah.
And
that's a neat name.
It is a neat name. And Fleet's just still the nicest. In fact, I talked to him this morning. But Fleet was my company commander. He was a senior when I was a junior. And he was, he's just one, the kind of person, he was natural leader. And you were always drawn to him, mm-hmm. and do anything that he asked you to do, and so forth. And Fleet was also an entrepreneur. He was always, figuring out how the Key Club could make money, and ran the snack bar, and that sort of thing. And when he went to the University of the South, and then I think wound up I think going to Alabama and graduating there, and then somewhere along the line went into the Army and was a an infantry platoon leader, first lieutenant in Vietnam, and Fleet was telling the story while we were down there at Loudoun, and it's I think it's appropriate, you know, we've just come through Veterans Day and remember all of our veterans, but Fleet was telling his platoon there in Vietnam, he says, you know, if you will do what I tell you to do, you know, I'm going to make sure that you go back home. Now, that's not a guarantee. Right. I mean, I can't guarantee that there's not going to be a sniper, but we're not going to do the normal things. We're not going to walk down the middle of the road, and we're not going to have the radio antenna sticking up, you know, where a sniper can, you know, can fire at the radio man and so forth. We're gonna do things, you know, that are not the normal and expected.
That's the type of leader that you want anytime you're in harm's way.
Because what you feel like, well, that guy's looking after me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, war, there are a lot of aspects in being a soldier in war. And right at the top of the list is get back and try to get back in one piece if
that's
you can.
Right.
But you see a lot of these movies where people are doing all these heroic things, but there are things that are not going to get you back home in some way. But you want to protect your buddies. I mean, you're all in it together, and you're all taking care of each other.
That's
that
right.
Means you're watching after everybody's back. And there's nothing in that I know of that can even come close to what the military does for people to teach them to look out for other people, not just yourself all the time. And it's such a great learning experience. And that's one of the reasons that I love the vets. I really do. Because it's not just being in the war zone. It's being in the service. And they have gone through all of the trials and tribulations that you can possibly have. Because whether you come from a rich family, middle class, poor class, whatever, you're all in the same boat when you go in the military, and y'all have you have the same responsibilities, and you pretty much have to look after each other. I mean, once you go in, you have no choice.
You're exactly right, and it's got a lot of commonality back to what we were talking about with football. Mm-hmm. It's not a you know, a single person's game. It's you're playing for the team, and when it gets down to it in the military, you're fighting for the man on your left and the man on your right. Mm-hmm. When it really gets down to it,
you know, there's one scene that has been played over and over and over in the mid 40s, and that's when they raise the flag at Mount Suribachi in Iwo Jima.
Iwo Jima.
Oh,
absolutely.
My goodness. That one still gets me. And if anything symbolizes the military of the United States and all the men have fought for that flag, that's the one that epitomizes everything as far as I'm concerned.
I think you're absolutely right.
And I hope, I wasn't here, but I hope everybody turned out for Veterans Day and at least thank one GI, one soldier, one Marine, one person in the Navy and Air Force, and tell them that what they really appreciate, what they've done for this country, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have a country right now.
That's exactly right. And you mentioned Eddie Ayers called in, and asked what my nickname was. I remember Eddie was in Vietnam, and I think Eddie was broke his legs there, and you know, knowing Eddie, they put him in a cast, and he was on duty the next day.
Yeah, he's tough. And actually, somehow, as you know, Eddie had surgery a few weeks ago, and it did really well, which tickles me to death. I was kind of worried about him. But somehow I got my schedules mixed up, and Eleanor Clare, Eddie's sister, Teasley now, and Eddie were going to be on. But I think that I'm going to try to get them scheduled again sometime in the near future. But if everyone out there would love to hear Eleanor Clare Ayers Teasley on the radio show. You need to call, not just call the radio show, but call her house and tell her how much you would love to hear her on the air, because I think that she would absolutely love it. Now, what did you just show me, Brian? Okay, we're going to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shevable, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take a nice ride. And on this beautiful day, about 20, 25 minutes, and on 231 South, and just before you get into downtown Shevable, you'll see them on the left. Go in, see their inventory, talk to the nice people there, kind of just pass the time of day, kicking tires. And then after you find what you want, I'm sure that they will make a good deal for you. And then it won't be long and you'll be heading back to the land of opportunity, and that's back into Murfreesboro, and you'll enjoy your ride today. It's so beautiful. And if you want to call them before you leave, call 1-800-264-6800. That's 1-800-264-6800. Or on the internet, you can pull them up, PirtleHowerton.com.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
It's turkey time, and Kirk and Birch is the borough's turkey expert. Deep fried or hickory smoked, Kirk and Birch is who you call. We'll make you the hero on Thanksgiving. Reserve yours today. Kirk and Birch, 893-3663.
Heritage South Community Credit Union now has a new home, 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire.
This is Darlene Robinson, branch manager. I invite you to visit us soon and find out what your community's credit union is all about. We offer free debit cards and great checking, plus exceptional rates on loans and savings. You can join if you live, work, worship, or attend school in Rutherford, Bedford, or Marshall County.
Heritage South Community Credit Union. New offices at 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
Let's look ahead, a big weekend in front of us. The annual Craft Studio Tour is this coming Friday through Sunday. Six studios are participating this coming weekend. Oh, here's a big one you don't want to miss, a bicentennial reenactment. Witness the township's name of Cannonsburg being changed to Murfreesboro. Friday morning at 10 on the historic square. And this coming Friday and Saturday, the International Championship Performance Walking Horse Show at the Tennessee Miller Coliseum. The horse show proceeds benefit Kendall Wishes. And the adult play Underwear the Musical continues every night through Saturday night, 7:30 at MTSU's Tucker Theater. And they say the play is not suitable for children and young teens. And in Uptown Murfreesboro at the Arts Center, it's the musical Annie, Thursday through Saturday, 7:30 in the evening, and a Sunday matinee at 2. In neighboring Woodbury at the Arts Center of Cannon County, Irving Berlin's musical Annie Get Your Gun, 7:30 Friday and Saturday night, and a Sunday matinee at 2. Remember to enter the Bicentennial Christmas Parade. Go to the WGNS website, look across the top blue bar, and click on Parade. You'll find regulations as well as an entry form. The parade is Sunday, December the 11th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but the last day you can enter is November 30th, and that's sneaking up on us. By the way, bring new blankets by WGNS. On cold winter nights, the WGNS Blanket Brigade gives them out to homeless people. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather-eye.
Mainly cloudy this afternoon. Slight chance of seeing some light rain. Temperatures hold fairly steady with winds breezy from the southwest. Tonight, areas of showers and storms, low 62. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 75 degrees.
Before the cold winter wind blows, be sure to take care of your car. Bring it by and let us check the battery and coolant. We'll do a complete car check, look at the tires, wipers, and more to make sure it's safe for the road. That's Todd's Complete Auto Care. We're on Southeast Broad Street, 962-9050.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
With today's guest, Newt Malloy.
And welcome back with us, and want to let you know that this second half of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, and they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And at Stan McNabb and Stan McNabb only can you get free oil changes and tires for the life of that vehicle. Well, Newt, I'm kind of rusty today, just going through it, but I'm absolutely enjoying it. I didn't realize how much I missed the radio show till you came in and I got back and started talking to all the people here, Brian and Melissa and Danny Page, and it's really a fun place to be, and it's just something about magical being, and people laugh at me when I say that, but it really is. There's something magical about being back in Middle Tennessee, and especially Rutherford County and Murfreesboro. It seemed like there's always something going on here, and most of us have been here a long time. Their families have. We all have deep, deep roots here.
Right.
And I know that you have a lot of deep roots, and you have a lot of people that you just mentioned their names. Everybody just sits up and starts thinking about it. And we're talking about veterans and what they have meant to us. And we have had a lot of people here that were in the military from Rutherford County that have gone on and fought in every one of the wars. We're talking about one, two, and all the way up to today's date. And it is something that I think that we all should pride ourselves in for what Rutherford County and the state of Tennessee has meant to this country. And it's one name that always stands out to me. And we're talking about military academies and excellence and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you gave me some time ago, it may have been the first time that you were on my show, we were talking about Jean Marie Faircloth.
Right.
And we're talking about her relationship with your aunt and how close they were and how she got to meet the general. I think that's all she ever called him, was a general in public.
That's right.
And how they got to meet and going over to the Philippines and things like that. And you had a letter that Jean Marie... Mrs. MacArthur, I should say. That's right. Not proper. Mrs. MacArthur had sent to your aunt. And it was such a nice, sweet letter. And you think of her sitting up in New York at that hotel. And she had to have been a different type of lady. She really did.
She must have been. And my aunt had, numerous letters from her, dating all the way from the time right after, she and the general got married, and mm-hmm. she was sort of apologizing for not telling my aunt ahead of time that they were going to get
pictures.
Married. Because, she was saying, Jean Marie was saying, well, we wanted a quiet mm-hmm. wedding, and I knew if I told one person, I'd have mm-hmm. to tell everybody, and that's the reason we didn't tell ahead of time. But this was... That letter was written on stationery from one of the ships that was on its way to Manila in 1937.
Wow.
Well before the war. And
now, when she was going to the Philippines that first time,
mm-hmm.
had she actually met the general before?
That was after they had gotten married.
Okay, yeah, but before...
Before. before. Yeah, I think they met on a ship.
I was thinking yeah. that's how they met when they were met on a ship that way.
That's right.
And there was there had to have been something special about the Philippines to her and the general both, because they seemed to talk in glowing terms of that particular island.
Oh, they did. And of course, MacArthur was really retired from the United States Army, you know, at that time, and he was sort of in an honorary advisory position with the, you know, with the Philippines. And then as World War II began to, you know, look like it was going to take shape, and there was some early, you know, movement towards creating some sort of defense of the Philippines, then MacArthur was you know, brought back into active service, and of course you know, defended Corregidor until you know, he was evacuated to Australia. But she my aunt had some letters from Jean Marie from Australia, and and then some from Japan during the you know, the occupation there and so forth, and then finally back to Waldorf or Astoria, where they came back after the Korean War. Or
I think it was Gregory Peck that played him in one of the movies. It may have been MacArthur, but I can't remember what exactly what the name of it was. But I was listening to him give his famous speech at West Point.
Duty, honor, country.
Duty, honor, that's right. And that is the most moving speech I think I've ever heard. You know, there have been some great ones that have been written, but it's just not, it's just not the words. It's how he verbalizes it, how he, his oratory's splendor, I guess.
Absolutely.
I mean, the guy was extremely remarkable, but as you listen to that speech, it makes you just want to go out and just do something, holler and scream.
Absolutely.
What?
And I guess in some respects, other than obviously a general of his stature, looking at large strategic type of things. Another part of his duty is to generate in the common soldier, you know, a focus of why I need to be in this, and get them excited about, you know, what they're about to do. Similar to what Eisenhower did before D-Day in his speech.
Well, one of the things that stands out to me, because anytime that you have that much stature, there are going to be people that are going to idolize you, and there's going to be people that will try to tear you down. That's human
That's right.
nature, I guess. And one of the things that's always galled me when they talk about his coming back to the Philippines, you know, I shall return.
Right.
Well, I think there's two or three takes on when him landing, and for the movie people, so they can send back the news back to the United States and back where the soldiers can see it. But I take exception with that, because he'd always wanted to do it right.
Right.
And it was the perception of what was really going on as far as him coming back to the Philippines. And it was one of those things that would try to build up the morale with the soldiers and with the country. And sometimes
sure.
I think we try to look too deeply, or at least some try to look too deeply, in things that are going on rather than just to accept things.
Absolutely. And, you know, George Patton did the same thing when he landed on Sicily. But, you know, Truman thinking about that time and the way, you know, we didn't have the instantaneous media that we do today with tweeting and, you know, the Internet and all that sort of stuff. It took time to get the news back to the, you know, back to the continental U.S. But, the thing that has always amazed me about our country, particularly in those times, is how, you know, the country was brought together, focused on one objective, and that was to defeat Hitler in, you know, in Europe and in Japan and, you know, the Far East.
You become cohesive. No matter how different you are, you're Americans first.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the sad thing about that, Newt, is it takes extraordinary events to make us be that way. And that's what's so sad, because we had 9/11 and 2001, and everybody joined together. I mean, we were ready to strike out and get whoever is killing our brothers and sisters. And then what? And then as it extends on, it kind of erodes, and then here we are after each other again, because it's not going to suit us. And I'm wondering sometimes, why is it that we have that resolve and that will only during those particular times? Do we get too complacent or too caught up in our own world rather than trying to see what's going on in the big picture? That's an interesting thing.
We seem to have a short-term focus as opposed to a long-term focus. And, you know, going back to that, you know, if you were people contributed in so many ways. They were either in one of the, you know, the services, Navy, Army, Air Force, or, you know, they were in the factories, or they were on the farms.
That's what started, most of the ladies started working during the war.
That's exactly right. Yeah, right. Rosie the Riveter.
Right.
I think. And, you know, we were doing without, at least our parents were. They didn't have lumber, or they were rationing lumber, and they rationed gas, and they rationed so many things. But you know, I never heard them complain about being, you know, subjected to hardships. You know, they still had figured out how to have fun.
Yeah, and you were focused. You were talking about being that. I can remember when they would, the parents and my parents would listen to the radio. They were not worried about what was going on in our world. They were worried about the GIs and what was going on in Europe and in the East and things like that. And sometimes I think that maybe us just being bombarded 24 hours a day with news and opinions and things like that. And, of course, I know I'm giving my opinion right now, but I'm giving my opinion against the opinions.
Which, you know, go back to your original question about MacArthur landing, you know, back in the Philippines for the second time. Well, you know, if you think about all the people back home on the farms and in the factories and doing without, to all of a sudden see that movie tone newsreel, you know, with a MacArthur or a Patton stepping onto the beach.
Lowell Thomas.
You know, and Lowell Thomas. Mm-hmm. You know, that gave your impetus to, boy, I need to do more. I need to do more than what I've been doing.
And the movies would get their top movie stars to do special events for the soldiers, whether it's going over and visiting them in the war zones like Bob Hope used to do, or some of those other things. But they would put on pro USA type things even in the movies themselves, and it became very popular during World War II, especially to have war movies where our guys, you could see our guys with the right attitudes and everything like that, that were out there trying to stop the enemy. And it's something that you rarely see anymore. They want to be get what they call realistic, but I'm not too sure how realistic some of this stuff is that you see now.
Right.
But it seemed like that the attitude was, we're out to save the world, but in particular, we're out to save the good old USA, and everybody stick together, and we're going to have a resolve to win this thing. And, you know, it's just something that it seems to be in this day and time. And I think that's one of the reasons that people like to hear history, and they like to hear the positive things. They want to have something substantial to stand on and something to believe in.
Right.
And you know, that's what it's all about. It's such a life is so precious.
Oh, absolutely it is.
And the things that we really believe in become even more precious to us and mean so much more to us. And that's what I love about this show, having people like you on here that have that that great attitude about things. I mean, you always have a positive outlook on what you're doing and what you enjoy and the friends that you have. And when you have friendship in this short life, you've been very blessed.
That's true. You know, we really benefited from World War II in so many different ways. I mean, obviously, number one was Germany and Japan were defeated, and we, you know, peace was restored. Mm-hmm. But you know, you think of all the things we learned in technology, in manufacturing, mm-hmm. and you know, when the servicemen came back, I mean, it was just a sort of a boom. Of course, that was when the baby boomers.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was the beginning of the baby boomers, and
the U.S. became the most powerful nation in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it took sacrifices that Truman, I'm not sure that I can understand fully, you know, what our parents went through to gain those benefits. Mm. And today we seem to want the benefits without having to go through the sacrifices.
But you know, the World War II GIs, the soldiers, when the World War II was over with, when they came back home, there were parades, millions of people on the sidelines wanting to see, touch the GIs when mm-hmm. they came back, because they realized what they had done. And there's a movie that I play every once in a while called We Are Soldiers. We Were Soldiers.
Oh boy, that's a great movie.
And the part that gets me, I mean, it's a great movie, it mm-hmm. really is. But at the end, when the guy that's writing the story, and he's playing back and he's talking about it, and he's talking about no one was there to greet them and all that, and talking, and it has one of the and some of them didn't even have family when they came back, and they had lost right. limbs and things like that, and one of his buddies was pushing him in a wheelchair, and mm-hmm. that and it talked about, you know, in the end we were basically fighting for each other. And yeah. it really puts a different tone on what goes on in war.
Well, it did. You know, going back to World War II again, you know, those guys came back from having served. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they went to work, you know, providing for their families. But they also, boy, they became Boy Scout leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They became coaches.
Right.
They became, you know, leaders in the community and their church and so forth. And, you know, just I think back to those guys that, you know, coached me in Little League, and mm-hmm. those were the ones that, you know, were in the service.
You know, one name that we haven't mentioned today, and I feel kind of bad about that. We were talking about great coaches, and one we didn't mention was Jack Jolly. And I wanted to mention, I got to visit him before I left to go on mm-hmm. vacation, and I've got to go back and see him. And he looked like he's doing well. Of course, his going through all he had to do with his surgery and everything. But Jack is such an amazing guy, and he has that same spirit that you're talking about. So Jack went through those hard times, but yet he has been such an inspiration to all of us who were fortunate
Absolutely.
Enough to have played for him and against him in some cases. but you know, he is still planning on being a scout for the Chicago White Sox.
Outstanding.
And I had a great talk with him before mm-hmm. I left, and he was so much fun and talking to him and his resolve. And when he starts talking about players, it just automatically clicks with him, and everything comes alive again. And it's almost like going from black and white to color all at one time. And I tell you what, it's people like that really are special to you and mean so much. And if Jack, if you're listening out there, I love you, big guy. And I hope you're still doing well. And I'm going to come by and see you this week.
Yeah. Jack was another one of those coaches like Mr. Pate and Coach Majors, who could sort of look you in the eye and get down to the, you know, your inner soul and bring it out of you. He was
a little bit more animated than Mr. Pate.
He was.
Now, Mr. Pate, I don't think I ever saw him get just real physical.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to. I mean,
right.
just staring into those eyes was like staring into a male lion that's getting ready to eat your lunch.
That's right.
But just think about how lucky we have been to grow up in not only the greatest country, but there are so many leaders that have been here in Rutherford County, and so many people that are away from the scene that are doing their jobs. You know, it's a known fact that you can only be as strong as your weakest link. And that is one thing that sometimes I think we lose sight of is everybody's important. Every story is important. Everything that goes on with that particular individual is important. It's like a domino effect. Everything affects each other. And sometimes I think that that's another thing that we lose sight of.
That's right.
One thing, we got away from it a minute ago, and I was going to ask you. We were talking about Fleet.
Yes.
And Fleet being in the service in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
What type of family did he come from? Because I never have asked you that, because we've talked about Epps, Alabama, and things like that. But I am so interested in, because that was such a huge, huge place to live at one time. I mean, you think of all the thousands of acres that Fleet grew up in. I was wondering what is the history of his family.
Well, that's interesting. He, of course, as I mentioned, that family, founded Loudoun in 1830, and somewhere along the line it grew to 26,000 acres, and then somewhere along the line it dwindled down to the 600 it is now. But it's my recollection from talking to Fleet that it has come through four or five generations, and they have always been through the female line until Fleet, inherited it. And, of course, now he is, giving it over to his children. But they don't live there anymore. They use it as sort of a place to come to and retreat to.
Wow.
Fleet's a big Alabama fan, and they were there, there 2 weeks ago,
LSU game. Let's go ahead and say it.
LSU game.
Roll Tide.
Yeah. That might not have been an enjoyable weekend.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it wasn't.
But he lives down in Tallahassee now.
So he traces his family all the way back to the beginning of that community.
Absolutely, and the family cemetery is there on the place, as well as the old slave cemetery, and some of the descendants of those old slaves, have continued to bury their people there. In other words, if you go to that grave site today, you'll see a recent graves.
That's amazing. You're so lucky to get to go someplace like that.
Oh, it's outstanding. Fleet's so nice to have us.
Want to let you know that the last part of this show has been brought to you by At Home Care, and they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And what they do is they come in and take care of the normal chores that you would have at home that you're no longer able to take care of, and make sure that you're still able to stay home and keep that quality of life that you've been used to. And of course, nobody wants to leave home. But if you've gotten to that position and you want some help, give this number 713-4639, 713-4639, or check it out on your website, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And that's one call that you'll be glad you made, because no one wants to get into that shape and leave their home. And this is one situation that can be taken care of. It can be taken care of very well because they're there 24/7.
Stop by Southeastern Tire Service before you head off for your winter travels this year. We're a full-service repair facility, so we can get your car in tip-top condition before you head out. Also, from October 31st until November 28th, when you buy four Michelin tires, you'll get a $70 prepaid MasterCard through mail-in rebate. That's at Southeastern Tire Service on Broad Street across from Advance Auto. Southeastern Tire Service, serving Murfreesboro and Rutherford County since 1950. Visit southeasterntireservice.net.
Hi, I'm Don Patterson, an internal medicine physician with Middle Tennessee Medical Group, a new multi-specialty office dedicated to the health and well-being of you and your family. Our physicians provide expertise in family and internal medicine, as well as other specialties. Middle Tennessee Medical Group offers two locations in Murfreesboro for your convenience. To make an appointment with a Middle Tennessee Medical Group physician, call 396-6800 or visit middletnmedicalgroup.com.
You're listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now, back to Truman Jones.
With today's guest, Newt Malloy. Truman's doing a little maintenance here on the building.
You know, I go away for 1 week, and they don't even change the clocks here. And Brian says it has to change on its own, so I'm sitting here watching the big hand go round and round.
It may do that for a few days, too.
But wanted to let everybody know how much I enjoyed being away, but it's always good to come back home. And it's nothing like being home and being with friends. And I made sure that I had Newt back on because he's such an interesting person and has so many interesting stories. And I wish that you had given me this earlier and tell the people what it is that I'm reading.
Well, as I was telling you, Truman, I guess in the last 4 or 5 years of my mother's life, she had moved from Stratford Hall to Adams Place and just had a wonderful time there at Adams Place. But she, of course, wasn't able to move about as well as she had been in the past. Mm-hmm. And she always had something that she was going to do, a project or whatever. Well, she began to write short stories. Mm-hmm. And there were about a multitude of subjects, and the one you've got in front of you is MacArthur Returns to Murfreesboro, Jean's
Big Day.
And yes. Then she had some about, she worked out at Seward Air Base during the war, she wrote a story about when she was a little girl, when she went down to Blackshear, Georgia to visit her grandmother and got to know a little girl down there and played with her and so forth. Mm-hmm. And would go back the next year and play with her again, and finally about the third or fourth year she went down there, the little girl and her mother were gone. Hmm. And mother always wondered, well, what happened to this girl? Well, she wrote a story about this little girl, and of course the first part of it was true because it was actual fact, but she made up what might have happened to that little girl as she grew up, and just a wonderful story. But she probably wrote 22-23 different stories about various aspects of life.
Have you ever thought about maybe finding a way to put these in book form?
Boy, you've asked a really, really good question, and I need to pursue it. My brother and I need to take that as a project.
Yeah, because just this is fascinating, and I think that everybody that's been in Rutherford County for any time at all would love to read some of this, and if you've got to do it. Make that a project.
I'll make it a project.
Yeah, we need to make sure that people can get their hands on it, because that's precious. It really is.
Well, it is. It certainly is to the family here.
Glad to have you on, Newt, as usual.
Good to be here, Truman.
Newt Malloy, and good friend, and we'll let you know that I'm glad to be back again. We're going to have a great show tomorrow and then all week long, and we're just set to... Vim and vigor and ready to go at it.